Hello and welcome to the Fast Break Podcast. This is Iman Kidwai. I'm joined by Patrick Martin and Dan Madigan, as always. Exciting times for the UConn Huskies. They're the number one overall seed. But first, let's talk about how they stormed through the Big East tournament, winning it for the first time since 2011. You love to see it. First time winning both the Big East regular season and tournament championship since 2002. Lots of firsts occurring in the world of UConn basketball, folks. They beat Xavier, St. John's, and Marquette. Dan Madigan, how are you feeling after the triumph in Madison Square Garden, the triumph that was promised?
It's hard to feel anything other than good after watching this team run through MSG and win in a lot of different ways. Against Xavier, they got down early, battled back, erased that 10-0, 12-0 kill shot from Xavier to start with a kill shot of their own, battled back, blew out the Musketeers, no problem. They go up against a very hot St. John's team Friday night at the Garden, technically a home game for the Red Storm. Rick Pitino, that guy in the red plaid jacket, jawing at Dan Hurley. It's a shootout. No defense whatsoever. UConn just makes a ton of shots and beats St. John's at their own game. And the next night, all the scoring went away against Marquette. First 6 minutes, it was 2-2, I think, at the under 16 timeout. Nobody could buy a bucket. There was an actual lid on the rim. I saw it. I was there. I saw the lid on the rim. Fortunately, it was for both teams for a lot of that, first half. But UConn battled back. They went deep to the bench. They found Jalen Stewart. They rode the hot hand, and they were able to cruise to a pretty comfortable victory after Jalen Stewart hit those three threes in a row. And it just shows the depth of this team, where Jalen Stewart was not a rotation player before the Donovan Clingan injury, and before Alex Kerbin tweaked his ankle earlier in the season, later in conference play. And now he comes and scores 17 points in two games and two of the biggest games of his entire life. And it's just really impressive that the depth is still this apparent, especially for guys like Stewart, solo ball, who haven't necessarily played a ton of minutes as of late. For them to be able to come off the bench, contribute in clutch time, it's just super impressive. And just the depth of this team can't be overstated. And oh, by the way, Tristan Newton was Big East Tournament Most Outstanding Player, a walking bucket, double-double, points and assists. Donovan Clingan somehow exclusively owns Marquette in the state of Wisconsin, absolutely manhandled Ben Gold a few times in the post. He was up and down, I would say. His stat line is going to look a lot better than how he actually played, but he took over the game when he needed to, and he did everything that Dan Hurley and UConn asked of him. And makes sense that this team is the number one overall seed in the tournament, even though the committee has told us that with their actions that conference tournament play doesn't matter. UConn is arguably playing some of their best basketball, winning in a bunch of different ways, right as it's time to try and repeat for a second national title in a row.
They got 20 or more points from their bench in all three tournament games. Do you know how sick that is? Especially because Hassan Diarra and Samson Johnson aren't necessarily known as scorers off the bench. They're not like a Joey Calcaterra who's like brought in to strictly fill it up. And Jalen Stewart hadn't hit a three against non-DePaul teams since on the road at Butler. That was January 5th. So like that bench is excellent for reasons other than scoring. And then when they're giving you 20 points per game off the bench, I mean, it's that had to be an ultimate of like a what the fuck moment from Marquette, where like, they're hanging tough, they're with you, they're battling without Tyler Kolek. You got to give Shaka Smart, first of all, a lot of credit. They have adjusted on the fly and performed very well without their star point guard. I think that they're if they get Kolek back, they can make a deep run in March. But they're hanging tough, and in comes Jalen Stewart, who hadn't hit a three in 3 months with three straight three. Like, what are you supposed to do? That's a rage quit. Throw your controller and log off at that point. But it's not just Jalen Stewart. They set a record for assists in the Big East tournament with 73, and all of this has come thing. You can pull any stat you want, but what I find most notable is all four, no, the three tournament games plus the Providence game, the regular season finale, they started slow. It's a narrative amongst the fan base that they're kind of playing with their food the first 10 minutes. And especially looking at the Big East tournament, they were up by one at the half against Xavier, up by five against St. John's, and up by two against Marquette. So the Xavier and Marquette game, they wore those teams down. And essentially, like Madigan said, they matched St. John's punch for punch in the second half to hold on there. But they're doing it in so many different ways that you have to feel good about the variety of teams that UConn got matched up with. You know, when you think that Iowa State, you know, high, heavy ball pressure and doubling and trapping. Okay, well, look at all the assists. You look at Auburn's depth. Okay, well, we just had 20 bench points in the tournament. The experience of Florida Atlantic. Okay, well, we have Donovan Kling and Tristan Newton who have been there before. And I gotta tell you guys, it feels. Is this what it like was like being prom king felt like? Because everybody is talking like I feel like the most popular dude in high school right now. And
I'll say from experience, yes. Yeah,
okay,
oh,
thank you.
absolutely. Yeah.
I was eager for your insight into that.
It's exactly the same.
Cool. Good to know. Good to know. Never been there myself. Thrilled that you
Re
were there.
refreshing KenPom to see if you get number one is exactly the same feeling that I felt when they crowned me the homecoming king
Oh
back in
man.
high school. So,
Drop the pictures, Aman.
oh, yeah. I don't even know if my high school did that. It was probably processed out by then by, the system.
No, but for real, like you know how it when like there's a stock market top every like your gardener and your mechanic is like giving trading advice or everything. Like you have casuals now coming up to me saying like are they going to really do it? Like yeah, like that's it's everywhere. I am so just amazed at all of these people picking UConn. I know they're beyond them that there's a lot of parity in the bracket, and we'll get to that. But it makes me uncomfortable. I am not used to this.
I'm comfortable because what UConn has done and the way that they've been doing it is just so crazy dominant. It's been such a show, so many records set, everything you mentioned, the bench points, the assists, 20 plus assists in each Big East tournament game. They had three of their seven highest assist rates of the season in those three games. And yeah, I mean they won in a lot of very difficult forms of contest, and for Xavier, playing for their season, playing for their lives, having some, they played the game the night before, so they were maybe a little bit more game ready compared to UConn coming off the break. But St. John's, I thought, was really impressive, just overcoming all the different things that went wrong. You talk about Klingon and Samson Johnson getting 2 fouls in the first half, and Castle having 2 fouls in the first half. That's the formula, like that's a very huge part of the formula. Plus, Danis Jenkins was going. So, you thought there was maybe something brewing there. But, like you said, that's where Jalen Stewart came in and had one of his really great performances in the tournament. I thought it was really interesting for him to have just two kinds of different games. In the St. John's game, he was scoring in transition, making smart plays, also being an impact on defense. And in Marquette, it was, the spacing and just being fresh and available to hit his open shots when he got them. I think for the Marquette game, UConn really was just fatigued there. Ridiculous scenes. The score is 2-2, 7 minutes into the game. You're saying crazy stuff like UConn just hit its first basket. The game is tied at 2, 13 minutes left. It's like horrific stuff, but great job by the bench mob getting him through there. I thought Hassan Diarra, Samson Johnson were really great in that game as well. And yeah, I mean, we say it over and over, but just how can you not take so much confidence into every game? And in case there's not more, Donovan Klingon broke through. He had his kind of monster game in the Big East tournament championship game. 22 points, 16 rebounds, First 2015 in the Big East tournament final since Patrick Ewing. That's a good thing to do. It's funny, there was Patrick Ewing all over the place. Dan Hurley also did a first since Patrick Ewing, which is win a second person to win the Big East tournament as a player and a coach. But anyway, we're taking a ton of confidence. UConn gets the number one seed. And now they're going into this East region, which many people are saying that is pretty tough. Many people having many interesting things to say about different metrics and whatnot. But how are we feeling about UConn's lay in the bracket here?
I felt better. I kind of thinking through what the bracket looked like for UConn last year, and that was the supposed bracket of death or whatever. It ended up really not being too bad, but I really think this bracket is almost worse. And I think there's a benefit in that one of two seed Iowa State or three seed Illinois will be knocked out by the time UConn gets there if UConn is fortunate enough to get there. So that is one threat that is kind of neutralized. But Auburn is a very, very good team and probably should not be a four seed. They're fourth overall in KenPom, fourth in a 10th in adjusted offense, rather, and fourth in adjusted defense. This is a really good team that just won the SEC championship. And to have the SEC champion, the Big 12 champion, the Big 10 tournament champion, all of those teams in there with, by the way, two other Final Four teams from last year, which doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things as much, but just in terms of looking at the resume of these teams and the players on these teams in the bracket, it's a tough, tough region, especially for a number one overall seed. So I've said this before. I think we covered this on the blog in our roundtable that'll be out shortly, but this team has done everything possible where it's at a point where it's very hard to doubt them and to bet against them. And if they do lose, they're getting somebody's best game. And if that's just how the chips fall, the NCAA tournament is weird like that. Like, it's really hard to win six games in a row. So it's not impossible or out of the question that they lose, but I am going to ride with this UConn team until I see someone come out and beat them flat out for 40 minutes.
The combined KenPoms of the East top four seeds is 20. For the South, it's 41. For the West, it's 42. And for the Midwest, it's 43. So clearly, no one gives a shit about conference tournaments at all. Good to know for future reference, as well as how to potentially game the system. Wait, we're not going to go there. But there's. You know, there was the initial panic, I think, but then when you look at the stylistic matchups, I really like how UConn matches up with teams like Auburn, like Illinois, like Iowa State. I'm just going to use those top three seeds as an example. It just seems like those teams are very they're hot right now. They're one of the three, you know, hottest teams in the country, but they each have like a weakness that I can see UConn exploiting. And they're going to have to play, like, that's what I think we're losing sight of, or at least I'm losing sight of. Like, they got to play UConn. Auburn has, you know, goes 10 deep and plays great defense, but they don't have really good guards. Okay, well then Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer can feast. Illinois, inconsistent defensively, prone to mental lapses. Not a great sign for the team with all the ball movement and screening that UConn does. And their best player happens to be like the same size roughly as Kadari Richmond, who Steph Castle put into a locker the last game. And Iowa State, like, crazy trapping, frenetic pace and everything, crappy offense that just kind of gets by off Lipsy and whatnot. So, okay, that's fine. Then UConn should probably handle the ball pressure, given that they have the size and you have Donovan Clingan that you can just dump it to down low. There's a yeah, but to every really good team out there. And that's why everyone's picking them, because there's no real weaknesses. You have to get super incredibly hot from three, and you have to guard the hell out of the ball. And I don't see teams in the East region doing that. Very, very good teams, but I don't see that formula playing out.
Yeah, I think I agree, Patrick. I think what you said is a really good point, is that UConn is still probably on paper heads and shoulders above the rest of the teams in this field, maybe other than Houston or Purdue, and that's on the other side of the bracket. That's a problem in Phoenix if they make it that far. So that is a really good point. The thing that I guess concerns me is that all of those teams are both really good and really hot. And we can talk about how much that really matters, but they have momentum. This is not a Houston team or an Arizona team that lost in their conference tournament. These teams strung three, four, five games together, whatever, usually three or four, to win their conference tournament and have things kind of figured out going in the right direction. And some of them are led by great coaches too. I mean, Bruce Pearl's a great coach at Auburn. Underwood at Illinois is great. So it's a tough matchup. And the thing that I keep coming back to is that UConn is going to have to beat really good teams to get to where they need to go, where they want to go. And UConn is a really good team. So it's not something that you can be scared of. I think we can complain about the committee, and I think it's totally justified. And I think all of this that's happening with the three top 10 KenPom teams in this region, all that stuff is kind of sliding under the radar because the committee was just so bad elsewhere that people are like, we're not even going to get to, we can't even get to this now. Like, they screwed everything else up so bad. We have to focus on this. But I think it's pretty disappointing as a number one overall seed. But at the end of the day, it doesn't take away anything from what UConn has done to get here. And there's a reason why the experts, people like us, anyone else, the casuals are picking UConn. It's because on paper and with the eye test, they really are the best team right now. And that may change in a few weeks, but you can only go with what you've seen and what they've done so far.
Yeah, we know ball,
That's true.
as some people would say. And I'd like to point out that the prevailing narrative about this year's bracket is there's going to be a crazy volatility and upsets below the top two teams, what they're saying, and even personally, like how would you put Purdue and Houston in there with how they've looked recently? So let's not forget that there is Drake, there is Yale. We just talked about Florida Atlantic and our boy Jalen Gaffney. So don't discount the fact that one of those teams can upset the established order, and then you're seeing UConn with a slightly favorable path. I'd like love to see Yale give Auburn a heart attack. I think UConn can beat both teams, but it could happen. So there's enough like parity below us that I think something crazy is going to happen that's going to nudge them along, where we're going to say, all right, well, Illinois got knocked out and Iowa State tripped up or something like that, and next thing you know, they're booking a flight to Phoenix.
The challenge is, I brought this up in a previous podcast, but the whole like, oh, it's the NCAA tournament, it's randomness. UConn was the best team of the season, and the whole season's resume proves that. We have called those people dork and shoved them, shoved their faces for years and years and years. UConn's got to take care of business in the tournament. It got the number one overall seed. It's in the East. It's playing four home games for the right to make the Final Four. And I would say, just with that in mind, just with that in mind, you should take care of business in that way. But on top of that, you have just an extremely good UConn team, extremely good. Like we can't say enough good things about it, except that just more good things happen, as we've been discussing. And I think it's just a, it's just an objective analysis. You look at a situation and you say, this is better, right? Like, I can play a team of 5-year-olds 100 times and I will beat them 100 times. This is a little bit like UConn in the Big East, and potentially UConn approaching the NCAA tournament field. How else could you be scared of anyone besides the team that's accomplished everything that UConn has done, 18-2 in the Big East, cruising through really its conference tournament? No one's getting close to them, like in these games. 5 points, St. John's, congratulations for getting to say that to yourselves and going to sleep every night with that 5-point margin of defeat, but
Hang the banner.
that was an 8-point loss. They were losing the whole time. So I just think, it's they're doing it on margin of victory. They're doing it with a team that's deep and really good. It's all deserved. It's just crazy. Yeah, we're the most beautiful girl in town, and everyone wants to not dance with us. That's the thing about the bracket. And going back to the bracket is that everyone's scared to be in UConn's bracket. Imagine you're a good enough team to be a 2 seed, a 3 seed, and you're placed into UConn's bracket. Even if you're a dangerous 2 or 3, you didn't want UConn. You wanted those losers at Purdue or Houston or who, like that's who you wanted. So UConn is the danger, and rightfully so. I think the other teams have every other have far greater reason to be terrified because they have to pull off the miracle that has not occurred to UConn on a neutral or home court in 2 years.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to clap back with. Like it's really been remarkable how great this team has been year to year, and I or year this entire year. And I think it kind of speaks to how this team is being treated heading into the NCAA tournament. I feel like in the last 4 or 5 weeks, with the Big East regular season title, the Big East tournament title, the Hurley winning coach of the year, Newton winning tournament most outstanding player, now the number one overall seed. I feel like UConn has kind of gained that extra level of respect that is normally associated with, we can bleep this out if we need to, I'm on the Dukes, the Kentuckys, the North Carolinas, even of the world. And I heard this firsthand. I was listening to a podcast today, and one of the hosts was saying that UConn is like almost like those Duke teams of the 90s, where they were just so good, they were so inevitable that they were just universally hated. And I don't think UConn is there just yet, because it really has only been a year and a half of just really incredible dominance through college basketball. But if UConn rolls through this first weekend and breezes through Boston and is in the Final Four, I think the talk and maybe the pressure of winning the title this year for UConn is like suffocating. It's going to suck the air out of the room, because if they continue to run through and play the way that they have been, we haven't seen dominance like this on the men's side. And when it was on the women's side, that was also UConn, but that's another story. So it's just really, really crazy how consistent this has been. And I think there's so many things that go into it, bringing in some new blood, guys like Cam Spencer, who never played in the NCAA tournament, really never won anything at Loyola or Rutgers. Bringing in freshmen to kind of fill in those spots. Those are hungry players looking to make a name for themselves and not just kind of piggyback on top of this legacy that UConn has already built. So I'm really excited to see how that plays off, but I plays out, down the stretch. But I feel like UConn has reached kind of a new level, a new watermark with how it's handled and how it's talked about on the national scene.
I don't think they're there yet, just because last year, while to the ball knowers, they were a sneaky number four favorite, but to casuals, they were still a number four team that, you had people at the water cooler like, oh wow, UConn really came out of nowhere. And it's like that meme where it's like they don't know that UConn has secretly been blowing teams out the entire season except for a 4 week stretch in January. If they were ranked last year like preseason top five or top 10, had a struggle and then did their thing in the tournament, I think then we'd be looking at them as like, God, you like, will you just relax already? But because they were so, they came out of the blue, they were unranked last year at the start of the season, that it really, like, that was the start of it. I think you're really going to start to get some talk, and this is super, super far ahead. There's a huge caveat there. But if you start to see how this season potentially goes, I don't want to jinx anything. And then all the losses, hypothetically, obviously saying Hurley goes out and hits home runs in the portal somehow, and instead of UConn getting absolutely gutted, they're like a preseason top 25 team. That's when I think you're going to start to see that narrative of like, God, UConn's like always there. They're just constantly like they're never going to go away. That's obviously so many different webs you can untangle there. But that's how I would think that they become like the God, just get him away. I'm so sick of UConn at this point. And I was thinking back about how I have been unused to all of this attention. I think UConn fans have thrived being that seven seed in 2014, and kind of like Kemba Walker's really hot, but besides that, we were kind of an underperforming team until March, and even in last year with the number four seed. Think back to 2004 if you can. It was a similar run. You're looking through, they won by 17, 22, 20, 26, and then that nail biter against Duke, and then they blew out Georgia Tech. That was a team that I think a lot of people felt comfortable saying, yeah, it's going to be UConn or Duke, UConn or Duke. And so there's, I think we have to almost have to take ourselves back to like those peak Calhoun era teams where like we're better than everybody and we're going to show it to you. I think we're almost struggling to shed the underdog skin that we've had about like, hey, like here we come. We're built for March. I think now the new narrative is like, no, we're just built for basketball.
I love that. I think we can coin it for Dan Hurley. There's, like you said, lots of hype building. There was even an article in the Hartford Courant, like if he accomplishes the repeat, the fact that he's probably starting to get his name into the Hall of Fame conversation, which is, everyone's in the race to go higher than the next person. But I do think that makes sense. I think what's really interesting and kind of cool about this is that there are so many parallels with the Jim Calhoun story, actually. I think when you think about the situation that Dan Hurley inherited, it's not an automatic, amazing structural situation at UConn in 2018 as a member of the AAC and with, two or three down years and everyone really ready and willing to throw dirt on that program's over that program's grave. So, different than the situation where Calhoun started, but down bad situation, builds it up really good, does it with people from the area, does not need to go crazy overboard in recruiting to make it happen even. And I think what my final point that is that he's also created the modern version of the developmental program. Because of like transfer and NIL and all this stuff, you can't have like the 3-year player, the 4-year player, maybe as much necessarily, but you can have Alex Caravan, who redshirts and then plays a key contributor role as a freshman and then blows up as a sophomore. You can have what has been his plan with what was his plan with Donovan Clingan, or what appears to be his plan with someone like Jalen Stewart, which is to try and get them integrated as a freshman. Hope that they blossom towards the end of the year, and then they're ready for a larger role the following year. To talk about the portal, dude's been hitting nothing but homers in the portal. I mean, he's a regular Sammy Sosa. I watch a ton of baseball, so that's a guy who hits home runs, right? So
Edit that out.
like Cam Spencer is. I don't want to act like I know the whole marketplace, but what best transfer recruit of all time ever? Who else has recruited a dude from Loyola who became an All-American besides Dan Hurley, who brought in a guy from ECU and also developed him into an All-American? Do we have All-American? Yeah.
Dalton Connect is the name that comes to mind. I don't want to
Sure.
dump cold water. I mean, you're cooking right now. I want to let you cook,
That's
but
fine. Yeah. That's a good one.
what you
Tristan
say.
Newton, though. Tristan Newton, Calcaterra, and Diarra. Just saying. The transfers have been hitting.
Even
Tyrese Martin.
Naheem Aline.
Naheem Lane. Could have been someone. Sorry,
Yeah, I
sorry.
think Hurley has a system, a format in place for what he's looking for from these transfers. And I think that makes him a little more selective, and allows him to hit a little bit more, because I think there are teams, even within this conference, that are just taking any transfers that have any sort of pedigree around them and then trying to smash them together and try and just beat teams with just pure talent, and that can be effective. But it's really hard to get results like you're seeing now from UConn, unless people are bought into a system, bought into a scheme. I keep saying this, but it reminds me so much of the stuff that Geno has done too. Like it's that level of dominance. Granted, it's not sustained. What Geno has done is insane and unrepeatable, but it's that same level of excellence. And the way that they're trying to get there, they're adapting with the times. They're trying to be flexible. They're doing everything they can to attract both top talent, like going after the Cooper Flags of the world and bringing in Apostolos, Rimuoglu, Emmett Hendry last year, like guys like that too, like that contribute maybe not on the court, but into the culture, in practice, all those other things. So I think it's a really holistic approach. I think Hurley is kind of a cerebral guy, and he's really trying to build something bigger than just his basketball team. And right now it's working very, very well.
I mean, look at Samson Johnson, who was like the highly coveted portal, you know, the tampering story last year with like, oh, they're getting after Samson Johnson. They have this dude on the bench who's obviously frustrated. He played in 15 total games his first 2 years. Hurley and the coaching staff sold him on a vision as being like, you're going to be the Donovan Clingan of this year. The freshman Donovan Clingan this year. And you can see how he has embraced that role, especially like in the past couple of games. I mean, he single-handedly woke UConn up, I think, against Xavier when they were sleepwalking. He had 12 points in 11 minutes. So the fact that like you have people like him and Hassan Diarra who weren't splashes right away. I mean, there's always going to be the Tristan Newtons. And I think all of us knew. You can probably find the recording of like when Cam Spencer came, you're like, oh my God, this guy's going to be amazing. Maybe not at the level of like all time, you know, favorite people, but we all knew those were going to be hits. It's more of like how even the ones that don't necessarily splash on paper right away, they find a way to contribute and they find a way to not necessarily always be like scoring, but like contributing to the team. And I think that is the mark of like an incredibly successful program is that like even your role player guys are buying in and making splash plays to win.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like what Madigan said about, you know, getting buy-in from stars and how it's a lot like what Geno does. I think that's a huge part of it with UConn. And yeah, back to what I was saying about it kind of being Calhoun-esque was just, you know, last year building that juggernaut with Andre Jackson and Adama Sanogo, and then doing it again. I think, you know, like the way they talk about the blue chip ratio, maybe if you guys hear like they talk about that in college football, you need to have your recruiting rankings at a certain point to really even be considered a competitor. Basketball is a little bit different, but it's probably held a similar trend of you need to be at a certain level because the formula for success has been more kind of like the way AAU coaches make their teams nowadays. And for a while you had kind of that Duke, UNC, even Villanova, they were doing really high level recruiting to get to where they were. But I think in terms of the earlier point about UConn really making a run, like a bleep in its prime or UN blank in its prime kind of run is very much happening. Like when you have a team that's done what they did in the regular season, that's already a very successful follow-up season to an NCAA tournament. But I think that run is very much happening right now. You've got some really great players like Ahmad Noel, Isaiah Abraham coming in. I think their retention is going to be good. I think we have every reason to believe transfer recruiting will continue to be good. So, yeah, I mean, I am thinking that kind of run is in the future.
Even if you see people like Kamani Young and Luke Murray potentially move on to greener pastures, you have to trust that the program Hurley installed will be will have the continuity that a little bit of change, like from the coaching staff, can handle.
Well, and you know these guys are, you know, Dan Hurley is locked in on to, you know, college basketball and the New York, New Jersey market, which is so crucial. I think the you know, it's like kind of cliche, but it's like he's a coach's coach or he's a gamer's coach. He really respects the game. He's in a league that respects the game. I think it's just a really, really great situation overall. But yeah, if there's an opening on the staff, similar to if there's an opening on the roster, like or in the starting lineup or rotation, how can you not have so much confidence in them to fill that, whether it's a, like I said, whether it's a coaching opening or a roster opening?
I saw on Twitter, I don't want to mention the name in case that's any kind of thing, but like a recruit that had recently reopened his commitment that UConn was not involved with at all, and was a guy that on paper you looked at like, wow, that he fits the profile of certain players that are on the team now, and all of a sudden the rumors are trickling out that he's interested in UConn, or their UConn is interested in him, and that is the effect of what the Hurley program has installed. And you just have to trust that those type of guys will, be attracted to that light. And I was also having I had a conversation with Sports Illustrated's Kevin Sweeney on Twitter, and he was talking about how that created like a how UConn has created this new type of recruit of processors, where you're not necessarily looking at certain athletic attributes or even like shooting attributes, but you're looking at people who can process an offense. UConn is zagging while others are zigging, where most people have one or two ball screens with shooters around to space the floor. Everyone on the court is moving with UConn. And that's because Hurley, at least for the last 2 years, has recruited people who can, who the simplest components of basketball are distilled to like, do I slip this screen or do I, reading and intuition? And I think he has recruited players who have those skills in spades. And that's NCAA is, any sport is a copycat league. We're going to see people start to find guys that can read the game and process randomness and process chaos. Because you think of those sets of how intricate they are and how complicated. They're really not. It's just constant movement and reading the reactions to that movement. And it's awesome.
Yeah, and that's what makes them so hard to scout too, is because it's not just one, two, or three plays that they're running, horns or fist up or whatever. It's a setup, it's a framework, and off of that there's thousands and thousands of iterations that completely depend on what the defense is doing in that moment. And it's really, really hard to prep for. It's even harder to defend in real time. And for UConn, it's just like if you play pickup basketball and you're with a good group of guys that are cutting and setting screens and rolling through the hoop, it's obviously a little more complicated than that. But that unpredictability makes this team so dangerous, especially when there's shooters all around and a 7-foot-2 monster inside the post.
I've already seen offenses start to implement a lot of UConn's base sets, like that skip pass that they do where they set two screens on one side and skip the floor, and then there's another curl screen and the shooter takes it and he has a decision to make. I've seen Marquette run that. I've seen Creighton run that. I was watching, I think, some Big Ten game and someone was running it. You're already starting to see these plays be implemented. And I'm not saying that UConn invented these plays, but they are working so well that scouts are looking at that and saying, okay, how do we fold this into our own scheme?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting about that is people look at the tempo stat and think that maybe, oh, UConn runs at a slow pace, but that's really like a descriptive statistic just measuring how deep into the shot clock a team takes their shot. They're running their asses off for 35 seconds. So it's not like it's like some calm, slow-paced offense despite that tempo number. And then, yeah, I think it does exactly that, which is wear opposing defenses down. When you watch UConn highlights, when you start to see just like exhausted defenders 4 feet away from the play, that's when UConn is just absolutely cooking. They're about to go on a run. It kind of is like a running back going downhill, where first half of the game maybe isn't breaking through, but eventually they do, and you don't want to tackle them 20 minutes after that too. And that's what you have to do because they run at you like that and have guys who just keep going and coming.
I thought it was interesting that last year UConn was one of the nation's leaders in the kill shot in the 10-0 run. And that was what almost they were known for, is they'd rattle off one kill shot and the game would be over. UConn is good at that this year, don't get me wrong, but they're not. I think I saw Houston was the leader. If you look at the graphic, like the bottom right corner of those graphs that you see online. And it's exactly that, where they're not necessarily waiting for one moment to, they just, it's more of like they're trusting their scouting to constantly like wear people down. And I think that, like, simply put, like, there's not enough teams in NCAA that are deep enough. I pulled out the stat, I think, earlier last week, that Hassan Diarra is Evan Maya's, I think, 46th ranked player, and he's UConn's sixth man. And every other team in the top 10, their fifth best player was in the hundreds. So when you have this 1 through 7 depth, and I'm including Samson Johnson even there, in there, even though he's not analytically dangerous, you have to respect the lob threat. When you go 7 deep like that, you really have to be clicking for all 40 minutes.
So, folks, with all of that in mind, how do we feel about the matchup with the Stetson Hatters? I know that they are one of the top teams in all of college basketball, but yes.
So I was doing a little bit of research and prep for Friday, as we do here at the Fast Break podcast. And I found a nearly identical comparison for Stetson that UConn has played this season, and it's Georgetown. And it matches up almost exactly. It's a little jarring. So I think Stetson is, I'm pulling it up here.
Think they're 100th offense.
Yeah, Stetson is 100th in offense. Georgetown is 101. Stetson is 342nd in defense. Georgetown is 328. Stetson shoots 36.5% from three. Georgetown shoots 34.6. They're also both kind of led by one dominant guard. Stetson has, the name is escaping me here, Jalen Blackman, who's kind of powered this offense, helped them through to win the Atlantic Sun Conference tournament. Georgetown had Jaden Epps. Both very similar size, like 6'3", 180. The comps are very, very weird. Seems like Stetson can score a little bit. They've played a few decent teams. They beat UCF early in the year in November. They hung around with Cincinnati around Christmas time. Definitely not a bad team. Definitely not a team that can be overlooked, but I don't think they're going to have the chops to keep up with UConn with this offense that we just spent 20 minutes gushing about how complex and beautiful and how many options there are within it. I don't think the 342nd ranked KenPom defense will be able to stop the Huskies.
Is Stetson's coach also rich as shit? Is
Great question.
yeah, that's what we need to ask. If they're truly like Georgetown, then that would be the common thread there. What I'm interested to watch, because as most of those games are, 8-9, Florida Atlantic and Northwestern, that truly see that as a pick 'em. You can go either way. Real quick, like off the top of my head, like, Bo Bowie is a stud. Like, it stinks that he probably isn't going to be able to, he's only going to get like 1 or 2 games to really showcase himself. He's been a 5-year dude that just constantly keeps Northwestern like above water. But they're very pick and roll heavy. FAU's drop coverage isn't as good as it was last year. One of Northwestern's best players, Matthew Nicholson, is out. I don't know which way that game is going to go, and I think I'll have more of an idea once I watch that game, but I know for a fact that that's going to be a sneaky tough game, I think. Not for anything that FAU or Northwestern bring to the table, more of the fact that this is going to be UConn's first real test on the final leg of this amazing journey, where there's green checks off of every big historic achievement. And they're coming off of the emotional hangover of finally winning the Big East. They don't really get much of a test, probably, against Stetson, with all due respect. And I think both of those teams, Northwestern, was in the tournament last year. We know what FAU did. They got Jalen Gaffney. They're going to get a solid crack at UConn in the first half. Are they, will UConn pull away in the second half like they usually do? But there's going to be a little bit of a tightness, I think, to that game that will be interesting. I'm curious to see how the team responds, because I think between that game and then potentially the Sweet 16 is when UConn will, I think, start to like a runner, saving his kick for the final leg. If they get to the Sweet 16 and it's Auburn, or if they get to the Elite Eight and it's Iowa State, they know that we're almost there towards history. Whereas opposed to if they get punched in the mouth with Florida Atlantic just raining threes and they're down by 10 all of a sudden, that's when it's going to be a real gut check time of like, hey, do we really want to do this historic repeat?
Yeah, I definitely think no, whether it's Florida Atlantic or Northwestern, I do think there is that opportunity that there's another slow start for this team, and maybe it's not too much to catch up to, but it kind of rattles this team because it's something that they have been doing a lot. It hasn't caused really any issues, but during tournament time, I feel like, especially with the first two rounds, I could easily see them getting a little bit lackadaisical. And if they're able to get through Stetson, and then I think Florida Atlantic will win that game over Northwestern. If they're able to get those two and make it to Boston, I think it's a lot easier for Dan Hurley to take that week and be like, look, we're so close to doing something historic, legendary. Your name will live in infamy forever if you can get this done. Let's lock in for two more weekends and take care of business. So that makes it a little scary. Florida Atlantic also a little bit of a just kind of a scary matchup in the sense they have some guys, right? Like the big man Golden.
Big
I
Vlad.
don't think he's, yeah, I don't think he's a terrible player. I think he's a really solid player, and I think he could give Klingon a lot of trouble. And I think he's a little bit too big and strong for Samson Johnson. I think he could kind of muscle him around. And there's some other weapons on that team too, but it's also a revenge game for Jalen Gaffney, right? We have to keep that in mind. He's shooting 39% from three this year. I never sold my Jalen Gaffney stock, never let go of it. I'm going to cash out this time next week. And it's one of the hottest coaches in the country too, with Dusty May. So he may have one foot out the door, but I'm a little worried that if FAU wins everything, all the mojo, Final Four team, could have been a title matchup last year, Golden in the post, Gaffney revenge game. It's just something I'm keeping an eye out for.
Yeah,
Especially.
we'll have the Jalen Gaffney revenge game, and we'll have Dan Hurley at the press conference going, "I took Tristan Newton and Hassan Diarra. They're not bad. What do you want? What do you want me to say?" But I will say, FAU Dusty May, that's a good coach. So you do have to respect that. UConn obviously plays a lot of good coaches in the Big East. Maybe even met a couple in the conference tournament, but Dusty May, that's like maybe the next Dan Hurley. Wherever he goes after FAU, he could pull a Dan Hurley type of thing potentially.
And they had a pretty lackluster, ho-hum regular season, but you can also look at it like they moved to the American. They had the uptick in competition slightly. I don't know. I mean, Conference USA, American, it's all shit. But because they returned all five guys, you can kind of look at that and say maybe they were just kind of they're waiting for the time to put it all together. They couldn't really get up for they had a couple of weird KenPom 300 losses, but then they beat Arizona. So like they can do it if they, and now is the time for a veteran team to say like, all right, coach is out, probably not out the door. It's the last ride with these guys. Let's take down UConn and show them, that they're there. And even though they stumbled against Temple, I wouldn't bet on them folding like they did.
Yeah, as people who cover UConn, we cannot speak to teams not taking care of business in the American, because we saw UConn do that firsthand so many times. And I'm looking at their schedule now, Florida Atlantic schedule. They definitely stumbled a little bit in the muck of the AAC conference season, but it looks like they didn't play Tulsa at home, but they did win. They did beat Tulsa. So the losses don't look that bad in hindsight now. UAB conference champion in overtime. South Florida was the number one team in that conference in the season. And then Memphis is Memphis, kind of a weird situation that Penny Hardaway has going on there. But seems like they're trending in the right direction, other than that loss to Temple to end their American Athletic Conference tournament season. But even if it's not Florida Atlantic, even if it's Northwestern, it is a tough matchup. I know Sean in our roundtable preview is talking great things about Boo Booey and what he can do at Northwestern. So there's guys, right? Like, this is the NCAA tournament. These are, according to the NCAA tournament committee, the 68 best teams in the country, give or take. So there's a lot of talent out there. There's some bad matchups for UConn, for other teams, but I think Dan Hurley has the ability, the experience now to kind of adjust his game plan as needed and make sure they take care of business, especially in these early rounds where UConn is going to be heavy favorites.
By the way, speaking of the teams that their season ended, they were on the bubble and rejected. They now have to start. Hope they're ready to learn tampering, because that's what that's what's on the agenda for them. The portal is open. Dan Hurley, anytime someone mentions a freshman on the team, he talks about tampering. He just goes, "Yeah, well, Jalen Stewart, great player. We're super excited for him. I hope nobody tampers with him and he stays on the team next year." Hurley's worried about it. I will say it's a very weird timing for the portal window to open right here. I guess I get it, because if you're on a team that did not make the tournament, you want to begin exploring your options. But come on, you have got to make it the day after the tournament ends. You cannot have, I mean, so that means Dan Hurley and the coaching staff have to be looking at the portal too. They'd be silly not to be keeping tabs of the portal. You know, I'm sure someone on the staff, I'm sure multiple people on the staff are, you know, keeping an eye on that. So that's got to change. It is something, though, that Dan Hurley mentions a lot. I don't think there's any actual fear for those individual, you know, like any freshman on the team right now, but anything can happen.
As an aside note, the more I read about Danny Wolf at Yale, I really think a team from Connecticut takes down Auburn before UConn gets a crack at them. I really
Nice.
I I'm ready to put my chips behind that team from New Haven.
That's
There's
cool.
also been a lot of buzz around Wolf as a potential transfer candidate, and that's
Yeah,
something,
I
we can
wasn't
talk
sure
about at the
if,
end of the season, but
yeah.
he's a really talented player. He's a seven footer, can stretch the floor a little bit. It's going to be a tough matchup for Auburn with their big man there. So definitely possible. I feel like that's been one of the trendy upset picks that I've kind of heard from all the experts this week too, has been Yale over Auburn. They have enough to do it. Pretty, I guess similar to UConn in that it's a complex offense and requires a
Wow.
lot of execution. So could be something that Auburn struggles with.
What if we get Yale UConn in the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight?
That's like a tempo, both those teams with tempos in the 300s. It's going to
It'd
be
also be just brutal. I think first meeting since the corner three, right?
Ugh.
Yes. Confirm. Hey, I would
Gross.
love I don't want to speculate on transfers, but UConn has done well with a 7-footer named Wolf in the middle.
Did they?
Oh, I haven't sold my Enosh Wolf stock. Still riding that one.
You know what Enosh Wolf did buy was a t-shirt that we made at the UConn blog, hashtag NFG for Niles F. Giffey, and just had an outline of his beard made by Penfield, B. Penfield from Twitter. Shout out him, our old t-shirt making friend. We had a there was a picture that Enosh Wolf posted on Instagram of him wearing the t-shirt. So, you know, we're always making history here
Love that.
at the UConn blog. I mean, I think it is start it like just like, you know, hey, look, we're locked in here. We're just like the staff. We're grinding away. We're watching film. We've got to look at portal possibilities too. So, yeah, you're damn right. I'm keeping an eye on these rosters and who's going to announce, because yeah, I think there are a ton of guys who could be really great fits for what UConn is looking for next year.
I also think you see a lot of these big names going in, and there's like the big list of everyone's in on them. You're not going to see UConn in on a lot of those guys, because let's not forget that most of the time they are locked in with what they're the current goal is. And I remember that being the case last year, is seeing all these transfers become available and UConn's name not on them. And at that time, remember, we were quietly fretting, like, what are we going to do? How are you going to replace Jordan Hawkins? And then all of a sudden, boom, Cam Spencer falls out of the tree. And I think that's going to be a similar path this year. We're like, they'll poke around, but they're really going to, I think, make their impact when the entire season is over. Because a lot of times, the guys that they want will be people who have had tournament experience, I think. And so, if someone's unhappy after a first round exit, enters the portal, all right, maybe, keep an eye on them. But that's, again, I don't even like, I feel uncomfortable talking portal right now. So let's lock in here and
Yeah.
focus on really what matters.
It does feel a little icky, but I think the thing to keep in mind is that there is a pool. UConn has, it seems like they've figured out the NIL resource area, and it seems like they're kind of able to get that machine kind of going and churning, and it won't be an NIL issue for anybody that's coming in as a recruit, as a transfer. They're able to throw money around as needed, and it seems like they're really able to get opportunities for the current staff as well, because I've been searching through Twitter, searching through social media, showing up on YouTube TV, some incredible NIL ads from, I think it was Tiege Hanley, and Buy Drinks was the one
Yes.
that was going around today. Just absolutely incredible stuff. The Tiege Hanley commercial with Klingon and Spencer in the bathroom shaving or moisturizing was great, and then Sonogo popping in out of the clouds was just awesome. Just made my whole day to see Sonogo again.
I wish the ad didn't spoil Sonogo coming in, because the video I watched was like Sonogo in an ad. I'm just, oh my God, like he has this great guest appearance. You have to hide that cameo, guys. Come on, that's marketing 101. But no, they have some great stuff. Not the biggest buy fan as far as taste wise, but hey, I'm gonna give them a shot now. They'll get my money.
I like it.
And
Yeah,
you
it is good.
I don't know. It's, hey, I'm
We
gonna be
love it.
open.
We love it,
Oh, we love
actually.
it.
We love
We
it
love
more
it.
than anything we've ever
I'm
loved.
getting word from my agent that actually, in
Yeah.
fact, I do love it. I drink
Yes.
Bai every morning. I brush my teeth with Bai.
I had a buy and then met my future wife, actually. So
Oh.
it's happening for everyone. It's refreshing, hydrating, and you can meet people. So that's the buy promise I'm hearing.
They know what they're doing over there. The two Bai ads that I've seen in my life are Dan Hurley and Sydney Sweeney, two people that just own the moment right now, right? Like two,
Two very similar
I'm,
people.
yeah, that's what I was gonna say, very similar people in a lot of ways.
The
And
lightning rods of the American zeitgeist, Dan Hurley and Sydney Sweeney.
that is kind of true. It that what you said was actually kind of true.
brains are so broken.
Yeah. Listen, Dan Hurley's throwing arrows at Vitamin Water, which is the right move, given his past. He had to call out that man, but he prevented that man from being thrown out, okay? I'm, of course, talking about the St. John's game. Dan Hurley, altercation with a fan. Hurley gets a technical. Guy is about to get kicked out of the game. And Dan Hurley, America's sweetheart, goes and talks to security and gets him out. Gets him out of jail. Lets him stay in the basketball game. But he is doing commercials now for a competitor. So something to think about.
And refocuses at halftime with calm.
Well, a lot of brands getting play on the Fast Break podcast right now. Calm, whether you're Calm, whether you're Bai, whether you are moisturizing lotion of any kind, you can hit us up. We would love to advertise your wonderful products. On that wonderful and lovely note, that is going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening.